This is very exciting. We have Guthrie Trapp on the podcast this week, who came on very last minute. Actually, I texted you yesterday.
Yeah, I thought I was just going to be a guest of you and Oates.
Kind no, of no, no, no. You had to reread guest. The text. I was very clear in the text.
I know it's been busy, you know, which is why I'm on the show.
because of how busy it's been. First of all, I've got to give a shout out to Guthrie because here's the thing about Guthrie.
Is this the show? Are we doing
we're
the
in.
Show?
We're in. We're happening right
shit.
Now.
All right, forget all that stuff I just said.
About what?
Zach, thanks so much for having me.
Get the fuck out of here. It's all happening. Here's the thing about Guthrie, though. I got to give Guthrie some props because, and I got to give a little context to Guthrie and I because Guthrie was really like the first kind of like established guy that I ever met in Nashville. Mm-hmm. I came over to your place for a lesson back when you were still in Berry Hill.
Right.
And you gave me a lesson. And you know, you didn't charge me for the lesson. Do you remember this?
Really? I knew you were going to be somebody.
Get out of here. You said to me, here's what you said to me, because I'll never forget this. I said to you, Guthrie, how much is this lesson going to cost? And you said...
You don't have that much.
And you said, don't worry about it. We'll figure it out when you get here. That's what you said. You said, don't worry about it. We'll figure it out when you get here. So I show up at your house, we do this lesson, and we're going to talk about this lesson, because I really think... I'm not joking around here with Guthrie Trapp. Mm-hmm. I swear, guys, I sat with you down for like an hour. The concepts in that hour, I'm not even joking around, changed my guitar playing forever. Like, that was probably the most pivotal hour of guitar teaching that I've ever had.
Well, that's because those concepts changed my life, too.
Because you know exactly. I feel like you preach the same shit to everyone, right? Like, everyone comes in and they want to know how to get from a one chord to a four chord. Mm-hmm. And all these Belmont students, this is what you say. You say all these Belmont students come to you and they're trying to get from a one chord to a four chord. Mm-hmm. And they know all this jazz theory and all their modes, but they can't get from a one chord to a four chord, right? Isn't that the kind of the big struggle, fascinatingly?
Yeah. And it's a lot of overthinking of the theoretical aspect versus the balance between that and the true spirit of making music, which is listening to what is going on around you and reacting to it. So strong fundamentals versus 80% of using your ear and reacting to your musical environment around you, you know? So, I mean, we can talk about that if you want, but there's a lot of other fun stuff to talk about. I mean, but I don't want to bore these guys with guitar.
No, but here's the point.
But I have been teaching a lot and have kind of figured some stuff out.
But here's the point I was going to make. The point I was going to make was I came over for a lesson. You gave me this great lesson. And then you quoted me and a crazy amount of money for this lesson. And then you must have seen in my face that I was like, holy shit. Like
oh,
I'm like new in town. I don't know, whatever. And you said to me, you said, why don't you come down to Acme tomorrow night and tech for me and we'll call it even. And I did.
I said that?
I swear to God.
Good
and
Lord,
then I
we
came
can't put that on the air.
No. I came down to Acme, and then you introduced me to like Pete Abbott.
Oh, yeah.
And Charles Wig Walker. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of helped me out. You like introduced me to all these cats.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, you've got a pretty incredible personality out of the gate. You know what I mean? So I knew you were going to. I knew you were going to do something here.
Is that what it was?
That's not why. I mean, if you worked for the road crew, I mean, you still got a great personality. But I knew you were going to do some shit here.
Yeah, we're still working on it. We're still building.
Yeah, it's been fun. I love watching. You know, I've been here 22 years, and to see somebody like Zach roll into town from New York City and embrace Nashville with your love of music and the guitar, but also your business sense and your hustle and your entrepreneurial mindset and all that stuff. These are things that resonate with me because I learned here a long time ago, I think, that, you know, you can play the guitar and make a living, you know, in Nashville if you're decent, and you can do session work and play on the road and all these things. But there's also, I've learned that instrument is also it's a vehicle for meeting people and relationships and networking and all the interpersonal aspects of what go on or what, you know, make up having a, you know, somewhat comfortable lifestyle, successful career, doing the things that you want to do and not having to get up every day and do the things you don't want to do. You know, for lack of a more eloquent way to say that, I think you know what I'm talking about. I mean, that's where we're all kind of trying to get to. In Nashville, we're all creative. You know, we want to be doing the things that we love on a daily basis. And there's a bunch of people here trying to get out of their restaurant and bar jobs to be able to wake up every day and pick up their guitar or their video camera or their camera or whatever it is, you know, or write songs or the list of all the things that you already know. But it's pretty cool that we can do this. I'm just walking in here, you know, these days, at 43 years old, I get up every day and do exactly what I love to do. You know, I love to network. I love meeting new people. I love playing the guitar. And that has been a great facilitator to be able to do that, you know. I love living in this town, man.
Yeah, where else are you going to go?
Nashville's better than ever.
And
locals that have been here a long time, like, you know, they want to complain about these little, these minor little inconveniences that are just everyday life in any other real city around the world. But Nashvillians, when we're inconvenienced at all, it's a big deal,
right?
Because it's always been so easy for so long. But
like now,
I embrace it.
It takes 20 minutes to get somewhere as opposed to 10. But if you live in LA, right, it'd be 45 minutes.
Yeah,
easy.
I mean, go to any other city and you're like, yeah, man, I mean, it's fantastic. I love the growth. I love all the new people that are moving here. We've got an unbelievable music scene with all the neo soul and jazz and the hip hop and the pop music, for the real pop music that's here, and rock and roll and all these great genres. Nashville is not really a boots and hats country town like it's was known for in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and even 90s, and even early 2000s. I mean, we've really, like, we've broken those walls down here lately, and it's awesome.
I
mean, all these heavy metal guys moving to buying farms in Franklin and Leaper's Fork, like guys from Korn and Megadeth and Metallica and all, you know, all these bands that we never thought those guys would want to come hang out in this town.
And now,
you know,
they're all coming
now
to Nashville,
it's
right?
It's amazing. Yeah, we're all here together. And
yeah,
everybody's loving it. You know, if you bought property here, you're doing good, and life is good. You know?
Yeah. Here's the thing that, like, I've never understood about your playing is you never really came up. You never listened to the Stones or Led Zeppelin or the Beatles.
Mm-mm.
Like, that was never really your thing.
I never learned any cover songs.
You never learned any cover songs. Mm-mm. But I really have never understood how you became such a virtuosic player, because you never had a teacher, you were playing in bands, but I would imagine that you quickly became the best guitar player in these bands that you were playing in. And the other thing is, even though I know you've spent endless time playing the guitar, like most people who are as good as you are, like, you talk to them and they've got this like practice routine and they're like the scales and like they really know this shit. Like, you don't know any of this stuff, but you're the best player in the room always, and like any room you walk into.
Oh, well, thanks.
And it's just fascinating to me. Like I don't get how you became as good as you became. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, because it was very, and looking back now, I mean, it's probably a little out of balance compared to most people, but I'm not going to change anything because not having that really rigid approach or education early on to kind of, you know, form that mindset of reading music off paper or learning a bunch of hard, fast rules that are on paper versus listening. It's very much like food.
How's it
like
food?
You have a recipe that you can stick to, but once you become comfortable with that recipe, then you're throwing in your own stuff. You know, you might want to, you know, 2 pinches of this versus, a tablespoon to the, you know, measured out perfectly. And then it's all subjective, like music, food, and art. Nobody can say that one person's wrong, but we have our taste, right? So it's an interesting thing. You know, it's not like an engineer that builds this table and goes, okay, man, look, if you put more than 20 pounds on this table, it's going to break. Okay, that's a hard, fast rule. But all these other things are like, you know, you're kind of throwing a dart at the globe. We can't say one person's wrong or right, but we kind of know in our minds, since we're the ones doing it, you know, what our favorite things are. But that, again, that's just our own taste, you know?
But I mean, I don't understand, because most guitar
somebody
players,
that thinks Pantera is the greatest band on the world and Dimebag Darrell was the greatest guitar player on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, that guy was amazing. That band is incredible for that genre of music. Now, I don't necessarily listen to that every day or play like that whatsoever, and everybody knows it, but I can't sit here and go, hey, that's terrible, just because it might not be my favorite.
But like what I
but
think
those
is,
hard, fast rules that I grew up, you know, kind of avoiding because I wasn't good in school. My brain didn't work that way. I grew up in a family that loved real music, and my uncle was a self-taught musician, so I hung out with him after school.
Is he a good player?
Yeah, he plays a bunch of different instruments. I learned to play with him after school. I was playing from early on, I was playing by ear, and I was playing with other people. So big difference, like being thrown into it. It was a very like sink or swim, like jump in with these guys and start playing, or like an, go to a bluegrass festival. And if you got a circle of people or at a picking party, we used to call them picking parties, where there's a bunch of people in a big circle playing acoustic instruments, singing songs, playing fiddle tunes and bluegrass music, to where the inner circle is all the like hot pickers. And then the each ring of the circle is guys that are just might be learning and they're not ready to take a solo yet. So they're on the outskirts, and then the kids are on the far circles. Same thing at a bluegrass festival.
So would you start out, like when you were younger, you'd be out?
Well, everybody does.
And then over time, you kind of move into the circle.
Each year, you're moving a little closer.
A little closer.
So then you're, you know, you're like 18 and you're the cat.
But would you just be watching people play and get...
And listening.
And take a visual memory? Because there's no way you're figuring that stuff out in the moment. Like you have to watch them play and kind of go home and work on it, right?
Yeah, and I was just absorbed by it. I mean, you know, all the great music from birth that you're hearing. So your ear and your feel is almost, you're absorbing this stuff before you even put your hands on the instrument, you know? And so by the time you put your hands on the instrument, your ear is already developed and has been developing since you could first hear anything, maybe even before you're actually born. You know, you're hearing sound, and if you're in that environment, you know, like if you're in an environment where your family aren't like fanatical music fans, you're probably not going to be around that much great music. But
yeah.
I was around it, like it was a big part of our lives, and so our family, our friends, you know, we didn't go to any parties that didn't revolve around music. So this was like an all the time thing, and then. You know, so, and then of course I had guys, you know, give me some pointers, and then I was learning stuff off of records back then. I'm 43, so I remember, you know, early kid, you know, having cassette tapes, vinyl records, and then of course CDs came along. I'm actually old enough to be able to say that, which is a little crazy, but, and then we had VHS tapes where I had a couple instructional videos that, like, that one guy that told me to learn, you know, if you want to get to where you can learn the guitar fingerboard all the way up, learn your chord inversions, and that'll open up the whole thing. Like the constellations start coming together.
That wasn't the Dan Gann video.
It was a guy named Pat Flynn, who used to play in a band called Newgrass Revival. Yeah. He was a session guy here, acoustic guitar player and songwriter. And he opened it. And when I, for some reason, I it clicked with me. And either it was, I saw that I needed to do that, or it was what I was wanting to be able to do. And I did it when I was young enough to have time to do it. So now teaching all these thousands of people around the world, and I'm not a teacher, but it's my lack of education has proven to be a good way to teach, because it gets rid of all the fat, because I am a professional musician. I've made my living as a guitar player, so I know what works, and I see what my peers use and guys that I look up to use, and I've talked to them, and I know it's the same thing. I'm not, you know, I'm not holding anything back. It's like, this is what works, but it's up to you to take the time to do it if you want to. If not, no problem, but this is the way to do it. So I was lucky to get into it early on, because I had time in my teenage years to be able to do it. You know, nobody now in their 40s, 50s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, nobody's got time to devote to doing it,
yeah.
You know? And you're learning quicker when you're younger like that. You're like a sponge. You're picking up everything, you know?
Yeah. But here's the thing that I think is funny is, like, I feel like every guitar player who wants to play like Guthrie Trapp is spending a lot of time transcribing your solos. But that's not really how you learned how to do it. Like, you didn't spend a ton of time...
No, you're going to get ideas
transcribing
from that.
Solos, right?
Yeah, you'll get licks from that.
Yeah.
So licks are like giving a guy fish or teaching him how to fish. Like, if I teach you a bunch of licks... You're just going to be able to use that one lick in that one spot in that one musical situation or song or chord progression or chord change or transition or whatever it is. And you're going to get locked into, like, oh, when that comes up, I can do this, versus, oh, now I know this bag of tricks and this, or these fundamentals rather. Now I can create my own improv, and I can tailor every phrase I'm doing to truly improvising in real time, no matter what the chord change is,
yeah.
And what the rhythm is, and what
but
the time is.
What's the difference? Because I still feel like, even if you're
well, you can tell when people are playing who sat around and learned a bunch of licks,
yeah.
And is just inserting those in, versus a guy that's truly creating in the moment and has freedom on the instrument to improvise.
Because, you know, he knows the triads.
There's a flow to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not always perfect because you are pushing the boundaries. But you know what it is? It's energetic and it's living and breathing.
Yeah.
And that's what translates to people with music. Nobody gives a shit how you got there as long as you got there.
Yeah.
When you go do a session in Nashville, nobody's ever asked me, hey, man, can you bring your diploma with you? Because we want to see that you graduated Berkeley.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a lot of times you tell somebody you went to music school here, they're not going to hire
you.
Yeah, right. Because these guys know that you're playing from your brain and not from your balls.
Yeah, right. Know? Yeah.
And you can edit that part out.
No, we're going to leave it in. But I understand.
Or your heart, or whatever.
You were never
is,
into,
you know?
Like, Jimmy Page, or you always say this. This is like a Guthrie Trap cliche. You never listen to any of this stuff. I don't understand. This stuff is so awesome to me.
Well, the only reason I say that is because a lot of times when you ask, I'm not bragging or complaining with any of this. I'm just telling you how it is for me. This is all just my own opinions and definitely have one, right? So, but, you know, so many guitar players and musicians in general, when you ask them how you got into this, they say, oh, I heard the Beatles on Ed Sullivan's show and it changed my life. Or I heard Led Zeppelin and
Van Halen.
I couldn't, you know, live without it, or Van Halen or whatever it is, these iconic, life-changing, influential bands of all time. Jimi Hendrix, whoever. But for the most part, it's Led Zeppelin and the Beatles are like the two big
ones. If you're a guitar guy.
Yeah, guitar guy. And so I didn't really know the significance of those bands when I was growing up. And I definitely didn't know any of the songs. I mean, you know, but by osmosis, you know, you can't help but to not hear that music.
Because I've heard you play Led Zeppelin. Like, you did Led Zeppelin thing. You sound killer.
Yeah, and you're going to hear some. Well, thanks. I don't know what that was when I was in that environment. But yeah, I mean, in some of the Beatles songs, you're going to end up knowing some of that stuff just because it's around. There's so much, like Hall & Oates. You can't go anywhere without hearing Hall & Oates. So even if you think you've never heard Hall & Oates, you've heard them a million times.
Yeah, right.
Every restaurant and bar and grocery store and Walgreens and wherever your adult contemporary music is played, you've heard this music. But I didn't ever learn any of that stuff. I never was inspired or influenced by it growing up. It was more bluegrass, roots music, Bob Dylan, Van Morrison, John Prine, Nashville, guys like Sam Bush, Jerry Douglas, Mark O'Connor, you know, Johnny Cash, real country music, but very little country music. I didn't really learn how to play country music until I came here and started playing with Don Kelly.
Yeah.
And I was still playing the Telecaster on the Gulf Coast and knew who Danny Gatton and guys like that were.
But what were, like, but this is what
I played
understand.
A lot of original music because there was a bar on the Gulf Coast called the Floribama Lounge and Package, which many of you listening here know about. And they had the guy started it in 1964. He just passed away, Joe Gilchrist, or, you know, I've known him for my whole life. And my aunt was the accountant for the club for 40 years or something. So when I was a kid, 12 years old, my dad used to take me out there on the weekends and I'd sit in with bands, blues bands, and grab the guitar and the guy would come up and, you know, turn the volume all the way up and I was scared to death. But that's jumping in real time and having to do something. It's a sink or swim, you know. But the Floribama Lounge had a every November they had the Frank Brown International Songwriters Festival. It was that the Floribama Club was about 20 minutes from where my mom and dad lived in the house my dad built that I grew up in. So we'd drive out there, and we'd play with all these songwriters, and it was like Hank Cochran, Red Lane, Mickey Newberry, Gove Scrivener, Larry John Wilson, Rock Kilo, Carl Jackson, Jerry Sally, and Dean Dillon, and all the big writers in Nashville at that time. They would all come down and do this festival because it was on the beach. It's you want to get a musician out of town,
take him
to a great destination.
Yeah,
right. You want to do a songwriters festival in Key West versus Omaha?
Yeah,
I'm in. Right, and so we'd go down to the Floribama and do, or we'd go out to the Floribama for the songwriters festival. So that was my like link to original music, and playing with songwriters and learning how to kind of not play on the vocals and phrase in between vocals, which is a big deal. Nashville teaches you it's all about the song. It doesn't start with the song. It also ends with the song. But so...
Wait, does it start with the song?
You know that bumper sticker, it all starts with a song? Well, it all ends.
It all, yeah, yeah,
like,
right, right.
At the end of the day, it's about the song, no matter how long you're here. And so that was my big link to that. So it was original music, and that was my direct link to Nashville. And so one night I was in the pool room back there, like the backstage area during Frank Brown, who was the janitor by there, old black man who was like in his 80s that was a janitor at the Floribama for a long, long, long time. And he passed away. He was dearly loved by everybody, and they named the festival after him. So that's that story. But Carl Jackson and some of those guys were in the pool room, and I was like 17, 18 years old, and those guys were like, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and they go, "Hey, you know, you really should think about moving to Nashville."
And you said, "Well, am I supposed to just pack up and move to Nashville?"
Exactly what I said. You remember the story?
And
I went, "Hey, man, you know, what am I supposed to do? Just pack my bags and move up there?" And they went,
"Yeah,
yeah, that's exactly what you do. We did it with three kids, you know."
So
then a couple years later, I did. I moved up there because the Gulf Coast is cool, but as y'all know, there's not a, you know, you're gonna play Jimmy Buffett songs. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but you're gonna do that for a long time and drink yourself to death eventually, you know.
Yeah,
or I probably would have, but you know.
When did you like because I feel like you gotta know that you're a great guitar player. Do you feel like you became really exceptional playing in the Don Kelly band, or was it on the coast? When did you start to feel like,
yeah,
like did you become better than your uncle pretty quickly? And then
I mean, you know, the everybody's kind of on island time down there on the Gulf Coast, so people's playing, even though a lot of the guys were really good, you're not around a lot of guys down there that are working on getting better or anything like that. There, if you're down there, you're playing in beach bars and you've kind of had your heyday, or you're not going to, or you don't want to, or whatever. But you're down there to be on island time, right?
It's casual.
So when I moved to Nashville, I saw these guys that are on fire. I mean, you know, there's people here learning and wanting to get better and realizing that, hey man, if you don't, like, this is the, you know, this is guitar town, you know, on planet Earth. This is where you come if you're a guitar player. I mean, and it has nothing to do with country. I mean, we have guys like Jack Pearson and Pat Burgesson, and of course Tom Bukovac, Uncle Larry, who's another worldly musician, and you know, these guys that are influenced by rock and roll and jazz and blues and all this other music. And so you can't live in a town like this if you're paying attention at all and not become better as a musician. Even if you didn't pick up your instrument for 20 years, you're going to become a better musician just by being around all this shit. And I'm not talking about whiskey jam. I'm talking about going out and finding the real high in musical nutrient music that's going on in this town.
Yeah.
You know.
But you had to be.
I'm going to tell you, like, when I was younger, you know, to get the facility down, and there's a lot of things that I'd like to be able to do that I can't do. Some techniques that I didn't learn.
Was that
early
classical
on.
Guitar? Do you ever want to play classical guitar?
No, not really. No.
What is it that you want to do that you feel
like
you can't
rock,
do?
Some of the rock inspired stuff, like some of the really fast, like the Eric Johnson kind of. You know, the stuff that like Bonamassa does it and Eric Johnson, where it's really fast, but it's picked. It's not sweep picking or hammer-ons. It's direct picking.
Yeah, it's very
up and down technique, which is weird that I can't do it because bluegrass is very much like that. But you really got to lighten up your touch. Just a little foundation explosion.
Did we
there.
Just explode? What just happened?
There's a construction. But anyway, I mean, you know. Not to get too, I don't want this to be such a serious conversation, but
God forbid.
Yeah, I can't remember. Before the building exploded, what was the question before that?
I don't remember. What can you, like, what?
Oh, the sweep, the fast. Like,
do you really want to do that, though? Because I really get the sense that that's not that important to you.
I kind of want to just do it to know I can do it.
Really? I feel like if that was the case, you would do it.
Well, yeah, I guess maybe that's it. I mean, I don't know. I'd probably... You know, it's like,
is it a peers thing? Like, do you feel insecure around other players?
No, I don't.
Like, yeah, you're the best.
I'm really comfortable in my skin now, finally, for a change, most days.
Really?
But yeah, because I've been here a long time, and I've got, my view of success is not only being able to make a good living doing this, which is, I've been very lucky, but also when I'm on my deathbed, I think that I'll be able to say, look, if you gain the respect of the people you respect, then you're successful. So I was able to move here, and for some crazy reason, I got to work with all my childhood heroes, you know, like all the guys my parents listened to that I looked up to that moved me musically. And I think going back to your question about when did I realize that I might have actually had some sort of natural talent or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what you want to call it. Maybe it's just you're a product of your environment and you picked something up and worked at it.
Do you feel like you worked harder than most?
What I felt was not like, hey, I'm really good at this. It wasn't that, and I still don't think that way, because if you're aware of what you're doing in the music industry at all, you know that you're never gonna get there. It's always a learning curve and a learning path. And so, but what I was able to do was realize that music was making me feel something. And that is when I was like, okay, I'm hooked on this. This is fun. And then all the other shit that goes along with it is just a bonus, you know?
Yeah.
But like when you put on, anybody that puts on music, whether they can play an instrument or not, if you're just a music fanatic and it moves you, then you're lucky to be able to feel that, you know?
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm saying.
Do you feel like you worked harder than most people at guitar?
I didn't work worth a shit at it.
This is the thing that blows my mind, Guthrie, because I always get this vibe that you never worked that hard at it.
I still don't work
and
that
hard at it.
And you
still work, but you're like one of the best.
I just started.
How'd you get so good? I don't get it.
Because I played a lot.
You just played a lot?
Yeah, played a lot.
Live? Like in bands? Yeah. Like that was it?
Never did anything else for a living. I always made my living playing the guitar.
I have a hard time learning on a gig, though. Like, I have to learn before the gig, I can try it out at the gig.
Right,
it's hard to learn something on the gig, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not necessarily trying to learn anything on the gig. I'm working out an idea on the gig, but you got to be careful because you don't want to be disrespectful to the music. So if I always say this, because I am kind of a seat-of-the-pants kind of dude, I'm lucky, man. I'm lucky, dude. Hopefully the crane doesn't fall on me on the way out of here. But I have been very lucky, you know. And so what I was going to say was, what were we just talking about?
We were just talking about how I feel like, and I've spent a lot of time with you.
This is what I always say.
Yeah, yeah.
I always say music is to be treated with the utmost respect, but not overthought.
Yeah.
Which is almost, in a way, disrespecting it to me. I mean, I look at this stuff in a real, almost spiritual way, which I'm not religious or anything. But, I mean, the music is such an important thing, but you can take the life out of it in a heartbeat. If you overthink it and you're trying to make a math problem out of it and I understand, like, I love a lot of electronic music and modern music and stuff like that. I'm not listening to, banjos every day. But, and I understand that music has to be lined up to a grid and all this stuff. I understand that. I'm not archaic in thinking like that, but you can also take the life out of it, and it's meant to have some life and some energy, and that's why I like a lot of when I get up in the morning, sometimes I'll put on some jazz. Sometimes I'll put on some bluegrass. Sometimes I'll put on, some old great songs, Bob Dylan, Van Morrison, Jackson Browne, some of my favorite songwriters. But man, sometimes I'll put on Miami Poolside Chill.
Yeah, we were
Pandora
just listening
radio,
to that coming in.
You know,
yeah,
where I'm like, that music kind of it's created to make people feel energy and wanna. That's why when you hear that music, you want to go get a cocktail and start partying.
Yeah, right, right.
They don't call it Miami Poolside Chill radio for nothing.
Yeah.
So I put that shit on in the morning, have a little coffee, and I'm getting kind of pumped up. It's not all guitar,
right?
I listen to a lot of different kinds of music, and I think the more music you listen to and you're open to and you're not threatened by, the more you're gonna have your own voice. And so I've had a lot of people tell me, like, hey man, you're not a session guy, you can't go in and sound like 15 different people on one song. And it bothered me for like 4 years here, and then I got over it, and I became much more comfortable in my own skin, and realized like, okay. And then also my career and stuff started to kind of take on a little bit of a different turn. But I'm happy with the fact that when somebody says they hear me, they know who it is. There's an identity there,
yeah.
Which I'm proud of that. And I'm grateful that those guys think that, because I look up to them. Like, these are guys that I was talking about on these records, that I was looking at their names on the credits when I was a kid, and the next thing you know, now I'm at their house, or we're on a session together, or we're on the road, or not to mention becoming really good friends with guys like John and Billy Gibbons and John Oates, and work with Dennis Quaid here, and we go to his house for his birthday party. And like, this is like stuff that you go, I'm still, after being here for 22 years, I'm pinching myself going, is this real? Is this real life? Like, we're here with this guy. Like, this, this could easily be a dream.
Yeah, it might
like,
be.
Hey, we took Billy Gibbons to Fran's last day in East Nashville, like, and we hung with Sean Brock flipping hamburgers in the mud outside in the rain. And we're going, I'm like going, this is too weird, man. You know?
Yeah.
But in Nashville, this is the shit that happens when you've lived here a long
time. It's not
even
that weird.
No, it's like it's not meant to be bragged about or anything, but it's also not meant to be diminished either. There's a happy medium with all this shit, and I'm a shameless self-promoter because I'm here to continue doing this until I've squeezed every drop of juice out of the lemon. And then when somebody tells me that's it, you're done, then I'll keep working even harder. But
yeah,
you know, like I said, the guitar is one thing, and if I worked at it like 8 or 10 hours a day, I'd be really incredible. But
was there ever a time where you spent that much time working?
But I also like to have fun, and there's more to life than just music, even though it is a very precious thing. And I don't want to lose that spontaneous kind of fire. Even if I show up tonight and go to the gig and I taught a lesson earlier, and the guy goes, man, do you ever make any mistakes when you're playing? And I go, dude, tonight when I go play with my trio, I'm going to make a mistake on every song, to me.
Yeah.
Now, the audience might not think it was, unless it's something really bad. But I'm going to keep pushing until that shit is hanging right here and almost falling apart, because that's when the good stuff happens.
Yeah, Jerry Douglas taught you that, right?
I learned a lot from him about that.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, okay, wait. So
you can tell I've had a lot of coffee today.
Have you had a lot of coffee?
I'm amped up. Well, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling inspired also because I finally got back into to putting some content consistently on my YouTube channel.
Yeah, you put a video up today about double stops, right?
Yeah, today or yesterday. And man, it's starting to kind of hit good again, and I'm getting really inspired about it. I had a good talk with the girl that helps me do my social media and stuff, and I've embraced that and seen that, like, if you're not going to be out there touring, which I want to do with the trio, and we'll be doing more of that, we've ran this whole thing from a computer or a phone for years here. Like the Instagram and all that stuff, which is not earth shattering, but it's good. It's a good steady growth, and all the people that are on there are there for a reason. But just these little guitar things, like education and the touring and all of it, have kind of it's morphed into a pretty good situation where it's good people, good music, good money, comfortable living situation, good travel. I mean, all those things are like, you know, at the end of the day, man, that you know, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. The artist works thing.
It's nice.
Is that
the artist work stuff? And I'm not trying to sit here and pat myself on the back by any means, but you know, it's good, man. I mean, I couldn't imagine going out, and there's nothing wrong with this because I did this early on when I lived here, but I always was playing really high quality music because I'm too stubborn to not do that. So I'm not going to go out on the road with any music that I can't get behind. The people, you know, the music, the money. Nashville's not famous for amazing paying gigs on the road with new upcoming country artists. Let's just get real. Nashville's also not well known for musicians standing up for themselves and having some negotiating leverage.
Yeah,
abso-fucking-lutely.
Yeah.
If you don't hear anything else from this podcast, hear that.
Yeah, you never
if
really
musicians stood up for themselves and demanded their value, but you got to have some value, and you got to be able to.
Does that mean? Do you mean like it's crazy how a guy could play stadiums and his guitar player makes $1,000 or $100?
You got to be able to bring something to the table, but what you really have to be able to do is be willing to walk away. It's like buying a car, you know. You got to be willing to walk away and go, you know what, man, I'm out of here. And if they really want you there, maybe hopefully they'll pay you what you think you deserve or what you do deserve. But most of the time, it's people playing parts off records out on the road, and they're young, and they're kind of like the carrot is dangled with the tour bus. And like, hey, man, tour buses are disgusting unless they're brand new, you know. And so, I mean, I hate to say that I'm going to get probably roasted for half the shit I'm saying here on this podcast, but I'm comfortable enough now to where if Music Row ceased to exist right now, there's a lot of people here whose lives it wouldn't affect. I mean, you know, not everything in Nashville is based on what happens down on Music Row or wherever these places are located now, Berry Hill or whatever. So there's a lot of ways to skin a cat. You know, you don't have to do it the way that it's been done for such a long time here. You know, the incubatory, you know, okay, we've got somebody doing really great headlining stadiums, then we're going to put five people on under them, and this guy that's down here on the third tier is going to be the second tier next year, and then he's going to be headlining next year. It's like, that's why it's so hard to find good help here. Like, I've been asking you, man, introduce me to some young hustlers that I can work with and learn from, management, you know, these kind of things, because there's only a few people here that are qualified to steer anybody and help somebody's career that's any sort of outside the box at all. If it's that, there's a million people here that know how to do that because it's a step-by-step process. But take something a little bit outside the box, they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, right, right. I got Josh Ronstein for you. He's doing a good job, right?
Great.
He's in New York.
I love the fact that he's in New York City.
He's a New York City kid.
Everybody I work with, you know, I like them to be up in New York because, you know what? They're no bullshit, and they're hustlers, man.
That guy works so freaking hard. Hey, what's the story with first time you met John Oates? He just gave you his guitar. Is that true?
Yeah, I was. I went to Telluride, Colorado, for the first time when I was 13. Me and my dad rode the train halfway there and hitchhiked the rest of the way up to go to this guitar contest at Telluride. And we also knew that, you know, Sam Bush was a big part of it and all this great music. Talk about an amazing destination. So then years later, I started playing with Jerry Douglas, the famous resonator dobro guitar player from Alison Krauss and Union Station and everybody, and tons of records and whatever. So anyway, end up working with Jerry, and for like 6 or 7 years, in my early to mid-20s, late kind of my 20s. And then, so we played Telluride every year. We played like 6 Telluride Bluegrass Festival shows in a row. And we were out there 1 year, and I ended up on the stage with like 20 people, Sam Bush, like the late night jam, closer of the festival. Like, I'm all the way over to the... I always go to the stage right when I'm playing because I can look at everybody else's hands and see what they're doing and go, you know, kind of, you know, vibe around that.
Figure
it out,
yeah.
If somebody goes down here, I go up here. If they go up here, I go down there. And a lot of times I don't know the songs and you know, I can kind of cheat by seeing their hands. So I'm over on the right. So Oates is all the way on the left. And he had, you know, he's been living in Aspen off and on for 20 years and Nashville for 10. And so he's just hanging out in Telluride. You know, it's right down the road. Basically, so Oates is over here. I'm over here. I don't know who Hall and Oates are.
See, this to me is so weird that you're so musically intelligent in some ways, and some ways you've got these like dark holes in your musical knowledge.
My history is horrible.
To me, that's so weird, Guthrie. It doesn't make any sense.
My music history is horrible.
Doesn't make any sense. You've never heard of Hall and Oates, but you knew them, right? Like you said a second ago, you actually knew. Of course, you knew them.
Yeah, because I've heard Maneater a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And I've heard these songs. You know.
Anyway, but I cut you off.
I didn't know because that was like so off of what my parents listened to growing up.
Yeah, right, right.
You know? There was no top 40 radio or anything. Anyway, we talked about that. But like, okay, so the end of the jam session, I take a long guitar solo, some reggae song, and then Oates takes a guitar solo, and then a few other, you know, a bunch of other people, every instrument. And then at the end of the thing, I'm walking off the stage down the steps, and he's down there at the bottom standing next to Sam and Jerry. And I walk down there, and he just hands this guitar to me, and I go,
what was it?
It was like it was some kind of Pensacur or a Schecter or some kind of crazy guitar. And it was nice. And so he goes, hey, man, I don't know who you are, but I want you to have this. I don't know what to do with it anymore. Of course, he's, you know, it's kidding, but he's paying me a not really nice compliment. And I said, man, I don't know who you are, but I'm not taking that thing. So I was like, you know, I don't know. Who is this guy? And Sam and Jerry are back there going, take the guitar. So I took the guitar. And so that was that. And then me and him ended up working together. The next day he goes, hey, man, why don't you come over to the condo and we'll sit around and pick a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I did. We played a couple Doc Watson songs. I learned that he loves, you know, Blind Blake and Doc Watson and Reverend Gary Davis and all these amazing, you know, blues and finger pickers and stuff like that. So we played a bunch, and then we started working together, man. That was like, shit, man, that was probably 16, 17 years ago. Well, now he's one of my best friends.
What was happening there when he gives you the guitar? Like, what's he saying? I like this kid.
Yeah, either that or what I was.
It's kind of a weird thing, isn't it?
What I always joke about was, I was like, man, he just didn't want to drive back to Aspen with that guitar. He just, it's like, hey, man,
He was offloading his trash on you, basically.
Here, take this, because I don't want to even carry it back to the car.
To the car.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
He would probably, I'm just kidding, really, but who knows. But I think it was, either way, he was paying me a nice compliment, and of course, I really appreciate that. But it's just funny that I end up playing with that guy and becoming, really good friends, because I didn't know who they were back then, And of course, now I know, of course, but... And then getting, the Billy Gibbons thing was completely out of the blue.
Yeah, yeah. How'd that friendship happen?
And still working with guys like Sean Camp and those guys that are just, people here need to know who those guys are, because they're so talented. It's just unbelievable. Pat McLaughlin, Sean Camp, kind of that whole, there's a crew here that's kind of like that other level, raw talent, unarguable, freakishly good stuff, like bring tears to your eyes kind of talent, and it's Chris Stapleton, Sean Camp, Jesse Alexander, John Randall, Pat McLaughlin.
Do you think Billy still has it? Does Billy still sound
great
when he plays?
John, and guys that are writing amazing songs.
Yeah, right.
They can play their instrument, they can sing, and they can write. So they've got like this trifecta that a lot of times you got a guy that's a, you go to, LA or something to write songs, or New York, and you've got a melody guy, a track guy, three lyricists, a programmer, you've got six or seven people doing what one person can do here in this town, and again, I know that all has its place, and there's a million here people will be go, but yeah, but you don't understand, like blah, 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 blah. And I go, well, yeah, well, take your iPhone and go sit over there and play me a song that you just wrote yesterday. Well, those guys I just mentioned can do it.
Yeah, right,
and
right.
It'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
Like freakishly great songs.
Yeah, yeah.
That aren't on the radio because they're too good for that. So I'm going to get roasted. This is the end. This is the last interview I'll ever do here in Nashville.
Yeah. No,
I'm going to have to move.
This is what makes you.
I'm
going
to have to move after this.
Wait.
I don't care anymore.
Is Billy still a great guitar player when you play with Billy?
Oh, my God.
Is he outrageous?
Incredible.
He's unbelievable, right?
He's a pioneer. Those guys are the thing about. Here's the thing that most people don't realize. It's not like a shred fest. If you want shredding and fast, really impressive shit, then go to TikTok or Instagram and have fun for the next 50 years watching every kid around the world play the most unbelievable stuff on the planet in their bedroom after they've either tweaked it or not. But put them on stage with a band and let them go.
Yeah.
And then let's see how many can hang with the cats and who can't, And so there's that. But there's also the fact that B.B. King had two licks. Albert King had three licks. It's like, but those guys were innovators. Billy Gibbons is an innovator, man. I mean, he's going to slow roll it with some killer rhythm and, lead lines and tones and stuff like that, and groove and pocket. He's an innovator. There wouldn't be certain things if it wasn't for LaGrange and that Tejas,
Even his pinch harmonic technique.
I mean, all
it's
that
crazy,
stuff,
right?
Man, that's where it came from. It's like the guy's 72 years old. So the world is different because of that guy in the guitar world. The songwriting and pop world is different because of Hall & Oates being here. So who cares if the guy can run a marathon anymore? They already did it,
Yeah, right.
They don't need to anymore.
Yeah,
They've already changed the world. They've done it.
What do you guys talk about that? I bet Billy loves hanging out with
you. You know what
me
and Billy talk about?
Yeah.
Last time I was on the phone with Billy, he was telling me about this crunchy peanut butter that he found from New Zealand. And the next day, I get a box on my front porch, and it's two jars of this peanut butter.
Is it good?
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah, he's
it's fine.
He's like me. He's a peanut butter fanatic.
Me too. I want to try this peanut butter.
That's what I eat in the morning. Banana, apple.
A little bit of peanut butter?
Honeycrisp apple, which are there any other kind? And then
I got to try this. I got to try this peanut butter.
If you're not eating Honeycrisp apples,
plug the peanut butter. What's the peanut butter?
It's called Pix, believe it or not. It's
really?
P-I-C, apostrophe S, Pix peanut butter, and it's from New Zealand. And it's really good.
Is it the best peanut butter? Is it really
good? It's really good. I get this other, I go to a place called the Turnip Truck here.
Yeah, you get the Barney's.
Sometimes I call it the Radish Wagon.
Yeah.
But I go to the Turnip Truck and I get Peanut Butter and Company crunchy peanut butter. And it doesn't have I don't think it's that, it's not loaded with sugar, but it also doesn't have that annoying oil that you have to stir in for 3 days. I'll never do that again in my life.
That's a food holocaust.
Forget that. You know, you open up a jar of peanut butter, the last thing you want to do is spend the next 4 hours
mixing the oil.
It's horrible.
So Pix has no oil?
No oil.
No oil in
Pix. So does
Pix.
Peanut Butter and Company. No oil.
No,
just good crunchy peanut butter. But yeah, so we'll talk about everything, man. He loves food and you know, and of course, still excited about guitars. Oates the same way. Great, you know, super smart guys on top of it, looking, you know, still looking ahead at 70 years old.
Yeah, you know what's crazy is
they're not burnt rock and roll casualty burnouts like
no
some
like
other
they're
guys.
Still in it.
Well, for one thing, they're still alive.
Yeah,
and they're excited about music. I mean, John calls me all the time. Hey, man, you got to try this new pickup or this new thing or this thing. He cares about it way more than I do. I don't get into that stuff as much, but. Billy's saying, man, dude, have you tried that? He's constantly sending me these pedals and just amazing books and all this stuff. Every 2 or 3 days, I get a new package on my
front
porch.
Isn't that the best? God,
it's amazing. I'm like, dude, what's going on here? It's crazy.
I want to get to that level.
But they're so interesting because here's the thing that I've learned about guys like that and that are really legendary and they're super successful. And they've been hanging out with really brilliant people their whole lives. Like, unless they're just a total, you know, like I said, I like to call them rock and roll casualties. You know, guys that just, you know, they either did too many drugs and they're just kind of fried, or they're just not that smart or whatever it is. But these guys, you know, Gibbons and Oates being the two that I know the best, and there's others too, of course, but they've spent the majority of their lives hanging out with people that are also extremely successful and extremely smart in tons of other genres of work. I mean, you know, race cars, you know, both of those guys being into cars, you know, financial people, real estate. I mean, not just that, but like everything, traveling, food, culture, all these things, you know. And so it enables them to learn a lot and be, you know, they're absorbing all this stuff too, you know, and it starts happening. Like the more successful you get, you're the people that you're hanging out with are really successful. They're really smart, and that stuff starts rubbing off, and it becomes this kind of snowball effect of, you know, you might not be hanging out so much with the guy that's just at the bar every night anymore.
Yeah, right, right.
You're now starting to move into this other world, and you know, for good, bad, or indifferent. I like that. You know?
Yeah. You know, I had Billy on the podcast.
I'm learning a lot from those guys.
Like that. So I had Billy on the podcast. And he said something to me afterwards. Like we were talking afterwards when we stopped recording. And I wish I had this on recordings. But he basically said that when he was coming up, like there was the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And all of his friends that were in his first band got drafted to go into the war.
Wow.
And I said to him, I said, Billy, like, weren't you worried about getting drafted? Or like, how come you didn't get drafted? And he said to me with the most convincing face ever, he said, I wasn't getting drafted. He said, there's no way I was going to go to the war. I wasn't getting drafted. And the way he said it was just like he was like, I'm not going. There's no way I'm going. And that confidence is like what gets you to become a legend, right?
Right,
like I feel like he had the mentality
in
everything he did. He was like, I'm going to become a rock star.
Right.
100%. He knew. Right. He was like, there's no way I was going to go to the war. He was like, there was no way I was getting drafted. He was I was fighting to the end. He's like, there was no way I was going to go to that war.
He is such an interesting guy, man. I mean, so interesting. The way he writes an email or a text message, or he's got his jacket with, when he goes out, he looks just like Billy Gibbons.
Yeah.
Whether he's wearing his pajamas or his nudie suit or whatever it is, you know he told me, he said, man, the only time I can go out is on Halloween, which we were in East Nashville one Halloween. He goes, the only night I can go out is Halloween because everybody thinks I'm dressed up as Billy Gibbons. Nobody bothers me. But he's got the coat with the business cards in here that say friend of Eric Clapton, and his notepad with his logo on it where he'll write you a note and give that to you, and his sunglasses with the selfie, and he'll do the whole thing, and he'll stay till the end of the night taking photos and talking to people. I've seen him do it a bunch over here. You know, I'll take him to East Nashville. He comes to the Underdog where I'm playing tonight. I know this is airing tomorrow, but it's Monday. And so we're going to go do that. But, you know, just an incredible guy. His whole thing is he's on it. He's on top of it. Yeah. You know?
So, okay, so we're running out of time here. Here's the thing. We've learned a lot here about Guthrie, and we need to talk
about...
Don't
hold any of it against me.
We're not going to hold any of it against you. And first of all, Artistworks... Artistworks.com, the country guitar course.
Yeah, yeah.
You can get some first-rate lessons.
Taught by a professional, not a professor.
Taught by a professional, not a professor. Mm-hmm. The YouTube channel as well, Guthrie Trapp.
I'm easy
YouTube,
to find. Just
easy
Guthrie
to find.
Trapp.
Instagram.
TRAPP, the second piece, silent.
He's on the road. No extra charge for the second P. Mm-hmm. He's on the road right now with John Oates.
What else you got going on? Guthrie Trapp, the trio. We got
Guthrie
the trio.
Trapp trio every Monday night at the Underdog.
We do that, and then I've been doing some recording with some songs that me and Uncle Larry.
You
Tom
gonna do a
Bukovac
new record?
Put out or putting out? Yeah, I'm gonna be doing a new record. I'm working with Billy some and with John and some still with Sean Camp and some of those things. Teaching a lot, growing this YouTube channel and just trying to help people learn in a organic way like I learned, you know.
What's the deal with Rick Beato? Why is that guy such a...
He's amazing, man.
He's unreal, isn't he?
He knows exactly what he's doing, and I think people were just ready for that, you know. No bullshit. And he's not just teaching one thing. His channel...
Oh, my God.
His information is... It's infotainment, so he's appealing to housewives that don't play an instrument, that just want to go... Oh, wow, he's got Sting on here, or he's going to tell us why this song's great, or there's the top 20 acoustic guitar intros of all time, or...
He's unreal.
Or whatever. He can go in so many different directions, and he's hard to argue with because he knows so much about what he's doing, you know?
He's
incredible.
Unreal.
If you haven't seen the video that made everything go viral for him...
It's his son, right?
Was his son, who was like 6 years old and a perfect pitch and could call out individual notes of anything he played on the piano. He would take all 10 fingers and play these not even chords on the piano, and his son would go A flat, C, D.
Yeah, it was like these clusters.
F, and he could hear all of it, which if you don't know, that is freakishly insanely talented or gifted or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, but
it's
I
not
said,
normal.
Man, But like I say, it's not, I don't know if it's so much that you're blessed or it's a God-given talent or it's you're lucky or if it's this or if it's that. I'm kind of a dude that like I need to see that, you know, this is tangible stuff here. And so I think that you're a product of your environment. You know, I mean, if you grow up around a dude like Rick Beato, you're going to be
high level functioning on music.
In tune, intuitive, feeling it, whatever you want to call it. And so I don't know, man, I'm not arguing with anybody that says we're born with it, but I think that's a little bit of a kind of a cop out. Here's what I think too. People don't want to be around anything that threatens them or their ability. You got to be a real strong person to look something better than you in the face and be okay with it. The last thing you want me doing is coming here and going, hey, man, I just did so-and-so's podcast. It's amazing. You're not going to believe the studio they had and the
hors d'oeuvres, the
greeters, and it was amazing. It was like being at a hotel. You're going to go, dude, shut up. I don't want to hear about that. This is my podcast.
Nobody wants to.
I don't talk to John Oates about Billy Gibbons and Billy Gibbons about John Oates. They don't want to hear about what I'm doing with that other guy.
Yeah.
They want to hang, you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You gotta be.
I know exactly what you mean.
You gotta kind of have some social and awareness about how all this stuff kind of works.
Yeah.
I say that being the biggest loudmouth, opinionated person in most rooms.
Guthrie's a big social awareness guy.
But you know, I mean, you gotta kind of know Yeah, I mean, you know. I don't know where I was going with that. I had a really good point, and then I completely lost it.
Oh, my God. We lost the point?
What were we talking about?
We were talking about Rick Beato, his son, who's a genius. And the and
product of
nature versus nurture. What?
Yeah. So, yeah, you got to be, you know, if you to you know, if somebody comes up to me and goes, man, you know, cool gig you're doing here at the Underdog, but, man, I just saw blah, blah, blah down at the so-and-so.
It was way better.
It was so good. It was amazing. I go, okay, great. Yeah, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
Good for them.
No.
But nobody wants to be...
What was
we're
the
all
point?
Insecure yeah, yeah. enough to where, you know, we don't want to hear... it's terrifying to see somebody. That's why you got to be real careful about this social media stuff. Because, like I said earlier, I can go here and find 10 million people right now that are doing stuff that I'll never be able to do. Okay, I don't need to see that.
Yeah.
What I need to do and what a lot of other people need to do, in my opinion, is they need to use this, but put it down, put your head down, put one foot in front of the other, find what you love to do and what you're good at, and just keep doing it. And don't, if you're on a line to get somewhere like this, we're all going to dodge and weave around that line a little bit throughout a year or 5 years or 10 years or a lifetime. But it's to not go way over here and get depressed because you just saw your best friend have a number one hit and you're still trying to get out of working at the,
fucking
Bar Taco or wherever you're at. Right. Okay. So you can't let that get you down. This is when you need to power up and, you know, you need to go do whatever it is you need to do to get over that and keep doing it. And so those are the people that are going to leave here versus the ones that are going to stay here and do it, you know. And this is a tough town, man. It'll eat you alive. If you let that kind of stuff get to you, you might as well just get on out of here. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
I'm not
saying that to be, you know, disrespectful or anything like that, but... And I'm not saying I've done it either. I'm saying this because I've been there and I struggle with it too. You know, I'm like, you know, but we have to see things. We have to zoom out and see, look at things, as, you know, try to look at it with a different perspective and an eagle's eye view. Because otherwise our perception of things gets distorted and we start being way too hard on ourselves and all these things that can destroy somebody that might potentially have a great career. So don't get too far off that line by watching some amazing shit on Instagram
and think that
it's, you know, you're never going to get there or whatever. Because who knows what they did,
I think
first of all, people
might feel that way looking at your Instagram because you're outrageous. People might look at you and have that feeling.
Well, I can turn you on to a bunch of other stuff that'll make you feel way better than I'm trying to do. But no, I mean, hey, man, I appreciate you having me on here. It's hard not to talk about this stuff and not get deep down into it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's good shit.
No, Guthrie, I appreciate you coming on last minute, man.
Of course.
We set this up yesterday, and I'm thrilled to have you on. We did this years ago on my college radio station. You came on over at Berkeley, and now we're back on it again.
I'm sure who you normally wanted to have scheduled will be here tomorrow, and you can...
And he bailed on me.
I'm just kidding. Hey, man, thanks so much, buddy.
Guthrie, thanks
Zach,
for coming on.
I love
on.
You, dude.
I love you, too.
Yeah, man.
Guthrie Trapp in the studio, in the Chase studio. One of the best to ever do it. Check out his record, Life After Dark. Came out a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Great record, actually. Some great songs on there.
Thanks.
His first record, too. He says the first record is a mess. That's what Guthrie says. I think the first record is badass. Monkey Bars.
That's everybody's favorite. You can't do the second one until you do the first one.
Until you do the first one. But Commodities on the second record, which I love. That's probably my favorite Guthrie Trapp song.
Thanks, man.
It's all great. You got to dive into the world of Guthrie Trapp. He's going to blow your mind. He's one of the best out there, truly, right now. Guthrie Trapp. I can't talk. Guthrie Trapp in the Chase studio. That's a wrap. Clark, we get it?
You
we got
it.
It.
Man, you get
we
it.
Got it.
We got it.
All right, man, that was funny shit.